This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I just texted the word resist to 43367, and I got back a message. Hi, this is Tess. Thanks for being a part of Resistance Summer. Text help for info stop to quit. Message and data rates may apply. Reply with your zip code to stay in touch this summer. So I'm going to reply with my zip code. And off it goes, and we'll see what happens. So, anyhow, that was Congressman Keith Ellison. I'm very sorry. And my apologies to any of you who waited for Congressman Ellison. As I said, in the future, we will not tease guests until they're actually here. Dan in Aurora, Colorado. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Dan.
Just want to talk about the changing the trying to repeal the ACA. The definition of involuntary manslaughter is causing another person's death through reckless behavior or in the commission of another crime, but without intent to kill.
Right.
And since the ACA gave 30 million people health care, and we know that if you take the health care away from those people, a certain percentage of them are going to die.
Right. According to Harvard University, it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30,000 people.
Exactly. So if the Senate passes a bill which takes away health care that people had, that's a known action which is reckless, knowing that these people now are in danger of death. And if the president signs it, they're all guilty of involuntary manslaughter.
At a moral and political level, I completely agree with you. At a legal level, I would love to agree with you. I wish I could agree with you. But, you know, there are lots of decisions that are made at federal and state levels that cause pain to some people and pleasure to others, that cause death to some people. And we don't have a tradition of holding our lawmakers accountable that way. But Dan, I think your point is really, really well taken. And, you know, people showing, during the Tea Party, when the Koch brothers were throwing all this money into this phony grassroots organization, and Democrats were holding town halls during that year that it took to write Obamacare. And they would, and I remember people showing up with signs that said, you know, killers. And so, and that's clearly, as you point out, Dan, that's clearly what the Republicans are up to right now. So, you know, perhaps what's good for the goose is good for the gander. On the other hand, super inflammatory rhetoric, particularly in these times when members of Congress are literally getting shot, probably isn't the very best thing to do. And
good point there.
Yeah. So I just, you know, it's like, you know, how do you square this circle? I don't really know. I do know that we just need to say enough. This is wrong. It's morally wrong. We don't need to call them criminals, but we just need to say that, you know, we are all in this together. So, Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence, thanks for holding for Keith Ellison. I'm sorry I couldn't deliver him to you. What's up?
Oh, yeah, that's unfortunate. However, good question is this. You know, Keith Ellison probably would have talked about how we need to work together. Now, all of that's true, but you can't work together with a party and the people. And this is a good question I would like to ask Ellison one of these days is, how can you square away a people that have now decided they're going to put their ideology over their best interest? In other words, we have a people that don't care about their health. They don't care if they have jobs or not. They don't care about anything other than their ideology. If that were not the case, you would not have had several runoffs where Democrats lost. They lost in Montana. Democrats lost in Georgia. They lost in Louisiana. So we can put our fight and say how we need to work together all we want to. But that's never going to work out for the Democrats.
Therefore, what should we do?
Like your first caller said, who talked about we need to fight fire with fire. I love you, Michelle Obama, but we can forget about when they go low, we go high. That's You, when you have a people that that's only interested in their ideology, the only way, there are two ways to get to them. The only way is, first you got to knock them to their senses. There was this old flight instructor that says, hey, how do you get a guy to learn how to fly? You walk into it, or hit it for, put that duh, do I have your attention? Well, that's what we got to do. We got to hit them with a 2x4. We got to get down as low as they get down, because the American public, they've proven that they're not interested in facts. They only prove that they're interested in ideology. And to get their attention, you have to get low, and then you bring them out. And then you bring them out. And that's how you do it.
Yeah, I think that's being done in a lot of town halls across the country. When, on those rare occasions where a Republican member of Congress, I think two of them out of, almost 300, include the Senate, showed up for town halls during the last recess. But I think that a lot of people are doing that. But I get your point, Lawrence, and I don't disagree with it, with the qualification of the last caller that, how do we maintain some semblance of civility at the same time that we express genuine, deep, heartfelt outrage? And I think it's possible to do. These are the debates that we were having back in the 60s, both in the SDS, in the anti-war movement, and in the civil rights movement. What is going to be the more effective strategy? Is it confrontation? Confrontation in a way that might go south really badly, for everybody? Or is it passive or peaceful resistance, which is a form of confrontation? My personal preference is to go with Dr. King's route and Jesus's route, frankly, of absolute passive resistance. But even passive resistance can be, passive resistance can be a very, very, very powerful force. It can be a knife, a scalpel. It can be very effective. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. And am I making sense, Lawrence?
Oh, yeah. But I would like to add that passive resistance has yielded only gerrymandering, voter suppression so far.
Well, I'd say there hasn't been any resistance to it, Lawrence.
For gerrymandering?
Yeah, Democrats have been sitting around going, oh, yeah, we'll do it when we get control. Republicans do it when they get control. It's like, nobody's saying nobody should do it, which is what Mark Pocan said today. We should instead set up independent commissions that draw, congressional district boundaries based on population, not on race, not on demographics, not on the probability that they're going to vote a particular way for a particular party.
Wow. And I appreciate the conversation you and I just had. You see how we came to a mutual conclusion. I agree with that totally. That's how we need to approach the Republicans, man. Get them, like I said at first, then now you and I were talking longer, and now we came to a mutual agreement. I agree. To gerrymandering, you need to get an independent council and forget about trying to divide us by racial lines, but by population.
Yeah.
And that's how we do the conversation.
Yeah, we should pass a constitutional amendment requiring congressional districts to be polygons, to be rather than salamanders. It's amazing. Lawrence, brilliant. Thank you very much for a very thoughtful and useful conversation. Great talking. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday right after this. And welcome back. Regina in Chicago. Hey, Regina, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Oh, hi. Hi, Tom. I'm so glad that I was able to get you. When you were talking about the opioids earlier, It made me remember a book I had read, and I wanted to share it with you. You might remember it. It's called Sugar Blues.
Oh, yeah, by...
Duffy.
Yeah, Patrick Duffy, was it?
Yes, I think it's Patrick.
Yeah, because I met him. He was a good friend of Gloria Swanson's, and she was on the board of our Community for Abused Kids, and I was in her apartment having dinner with her back, in 1981, I think, and he was a good friend of hers. He helped write her or helped edit her autobiography, and he was an amazing guy.
He talks about her at the beginning.
William Duffy.
Okay, he talks about her at the beginning of his book and explains how, you know, she felt about sugar, and she was vehemently against it.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why I bring it up is because it was right in line with what you were saying. I was appalled at that, but then I wasn't surprised because... It, for people who want to get this book, what I learned from it is that the people with money, the people with power, the oligarchies, have done this for centuries, okay?
Yeah.
And he maps it all out in that book, and he talks about how they knew how sugar could hurt people. And I can't remember the doctor's name that he talks about in there, but there was one doctor who saw the ills of what was going on with sugar. And this particular doctor tried to announce and save people, and they ruined his career, you know, these people with money. It's fascinating. And they're doing the same thing today. These people don't care anything about making you sick.
I agree. I agree, Regina. It's been almost 40 years since I read that book and since I met Bill Duffy.
I'm getting ready to go do notes in it so I can...
There you go. But my recollection of it, and if you've read it, apparently you've read it far more recently than I have. My recollection is that a large part of the book, in addition to talking about sugar being basically a poison and something that can cause cancers and things like that, that it causes depression, that it gets you high when you take it and you crash afterwards, and then you get all saddened out. That's the sugar blues. And the result of that is that it causes you to crave more sugar. And so it's basically an addiction response.
Exactly. Exactly. I've been weaning myself off of sugar for years.
Yeah.
And then when I got into this book, I stepped it up 10 notches.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I don't remember if he talked about it in the book or not, but there was around that time in the late 70s, early 80s, there was also some really good research on alcoholism suggesting that a lot of alcoholics were actually more addicted to the sugar that alcohol converts into in the liver than, you know, so you drink alcohol, it goes bang right into your liver faster than water does. And that actually it was a sugar addiction for a lot of people, not an alcohol addiction, which is one of the reasons why you go to an AA meeting and you find people putting five things of sugar in their coffee.
Exactly. Oh, it's a horrible thing. And it was so funny. Another thing that promoted me to call, other than you, of course, I'm here at work, and I'm a small business owner. And I was asking my worker, because I was on the phone trying to make an appointment with my neurologist.
Regina, we are out of time. You got about 5 seconds here. Quick point.
But anyway, they put stuff out to make us sick, and we need to wake up and be ready for it.
Amen. Well said, Regina, and thank you for hitting the post. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Kurt in Los Angeles. Hey, Kurt, thanks for waiting for Congressman Ellison. I'm very sorry he's not here. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, you know what? As disappointing as it is not to speak to Congressman Ellison, I'll hold on the phone 2 hours any day for you, Tom. So
well, thank you, Kurt. That's very kind of you. I'm honored. What's on your mind?
Well, since Congressman's not here, I'll ask you a question or I'll direct my question to you regarding something else I wanted to talk to you about. Have you caught a film by the name of Defiance? In the past, it came out in 2008 with Daniel Craig, Mr. James Bond himself as the lead.
No, I haven't. Well, if I did, I don't remember it. I mean, it's possible.
Okay, you would remember it. It's a very, very compelling story based on true events of 1939 Poland. Three Jewish brothers, the Bielski brothers, they took refuge in the Belarusia woods, north of Poland, between Poland and Russia.
Right.
And they lived there in the woods for almost 4 years, or at least 3 years.
Whoa.
And by the time they were done, over 1,200 Jews had took refuge and saved themselves from the Nazis. And it's a very compelling story. It's based on true events. And next to Schindler's List, I would recommend it to anybody. So it really just shows how vulnerable people can be when they're subjected to fascism and a takeover of the Nazi mentality, the barbarianism that happens. And I just really think that sometimes people don't get it when fascism slowly creeps up into your democracy and takes over. And I really think it's a good movie to watch, if not Schindler's List itself.
Right.
People really should check out this film. It's called Defiance with Daniel Craig.
Right.
And it's
it sounds brilliant, Kurt. And it's so interesting that you bring that up right after Keith was it, I think it was Ellison, maybe it was Congressman Pocan who said that they had just defeated. In fact, I think that's probably why Congressman Ellison was late for the show. They just defeated a Republican amendment, I guess, to a piece of legislation that was going to pass. And the amendment would have created the study group about Islam and to find all these things wrong with Islam and how to counter Islam and whatnot. And I mean, that's the kind of stuff that was happening in Germany in the very early 30s. And, it's a dangerous road to go down.
Yeah. And that right there, you just hit another nail, Tom. Why did we even have to spend time defeating a bill such as that? How would that legislation that Republican whoever put forth, how was that going to help us form a more perfect union?
Right.
It wasn't. Yeah. All it was a piece of legislation that was going to attack another group's religion, okay, and cause and be one more step towards fascism, as opposed to doing what we're supposed to be doing, is building a more perfect union among our people.
Yeah.
Okay, so that just tells me that these people have not just an ideology, okay, these people have read the works of Adolf Hitler, that being My New Order. They had President 45. That's in the White House. He slept with a copy of Mein New Order next to his bed, according to his...
Yeah, Mein Kampf. By the way, Mein Kampf is German for My Struggle, not Mein New Order, but just FYI.
No, he had both.
Oh, he had both. Okay.
He got confused, right.
Yeah.
He got accused of Mein Kampf, and he admitted, no, I don't have Mein Kampf, it's Mein New Order.
Oh, so it's the collected speeches.
Yeah, the collected speeches, right.
Yeah, amazing.
It doesn't even matter, though.
Yeah.
He has a history of being connected. His father was busted at a Klan rally, at a Klan brawl.
Yep.
Okay? So we need to wake up and understand that these people are in touch with their own Nordic roots, and they're pushing, just like some people like to push Ronald Reagan's vision of what America should be. There are some people that are connected to the Nordic roots that goes back to Nazi Germany, and they're just proliferating that agenda.
Yeah.
Okay?
Because
there's no reason to be sitting here kicking out Muslims, kicking out Mexicans, doing all this other stuff that's bringing turmoil to our country, as opposed to just trying to help form a more perfect union, okay? And at the same time, let me talk about this health care bill. Why are we denying health care while at the same time removing EPA regulations that are just going to start poisoning our water, poisoning our food via Monsanto? Okay, so we're putting all these poisons into the atmosphere with the deregulation of through the EPA. At the same time, telling people, well, we're going to make it more difficult for you to get health care.
Right. Once we poison you,
kill people.
Right. Yeah, that is a supreme irony, Kurt. And I've never heard anybody juxtapose those two things as well as you just did. Yes, whether it's Koch Industries or BP or whatever. Or the coal companies now, they can dump more poison in the rivers and, the streams of the United States rule and all this kind of stuff. And yes, we will poison you. And when you show up sick in the ER, tough luck because you don't have health care. That's nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
Definitely, Tom. Anyway, thank you, man. You do yeoman's work. And I really appreciate you being here every day for us. So you take care.
Thank you so much, Kurt. Great to hear from you. I appreciate the call. It truly is an amazing thing. Oh, I just got a text message back from Resist. If you text the word Resist to 43367, then they send you back a note saying, cool, what's your zip code so we can stay in touch? I sent them my zip code, and they said, great, you're ready to go. We'll be in touch soon. So if you want to know, this was Congressman Keith Ellison's thing. I don't know the details of the association between this, if it's the official Democratic Party or if it's a group. I don't, we'll find out. But if you text to 43367, the word resist, you will get on their message system. And you can stop anytime you want. You can disconnect from it. So, kind of a cool thing. Anyway, we'll be right back. It's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Summer here. Anything Goes Friday. Back with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
More of your calls right after. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on It Goes Friday. Deborah in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Deborah, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for calling.
I had a comment I really wanted to get to Congressman Ellison. Maybe you can pass it along. But also to your listeners, and I know you will know exactly whereof I speak. I want to recommend to all progressives, all Democrats, et cetera, to read two books, one by David Corten called Change the Story, Change the Future,
yep.
And the second, Don't Think of an Elephant by George Lakoff, the linguist.
Yep.
Democrats are pitiful, no matter how good they are, in terms of their agenda or their commitment. We are pitiful at framing, and we are out to sea because the Republicans are brilliant at framing. They've been doing it for 40 years, and we are lost at sea.
Yeah, it's not just framing. It's the larger frame of marketing, basically.
Exactly.
And the Republicans can market lies, and Democrats sit around and go, well, what we're saying is true, so it should be self-evident to everyone, so, you know, let's just tell the truth. And sometimes, you know, just telling the truth is like confusing or didactic or you know, whatever. You've got to figure out a way to market it.
And 10, 15-point plans, it's not going to speak to it. But also, we cannot pivot to the center anymore.
Oh, that's crazy.
And I think when you look at David Corten's Change the Story, Change the Future, you can see that we really need to break out completely, as you do, from the corporate hypnosis. You know, and really start framing our platforms based on a living economy, as David Corten would call it, and be able to frame it that way, because very few actual people who are still human beings would be able to argue against a living economy. Do you agree, Tom?
I not only agree, Deborah, but a good sign that things are moving in this direction was last week, as I recall, when Mark Penn, as I recall, he wrote that op-ed in either the Times or the Washington Post, saying that the Democratic Party needs to move to the center. And if you, I was shocked by the article, but what was gratifying was reading the comments of the readers, and almost without exception, they were like, "What, are you effing crazy?" Forgive my use of.
No, I understand.
You know. It was just.
But the other thing is that the DNC and the PCCC are now engaged in candidate trainings, and these two books and these two thinkers need to be incorporated in every candidate training in this country.
I agree.
Okay, in terms of the progressives, and that's why I was really looking forward not just to talk to you, who I love, but also Representative Ellison, because he's really down on the ground with that kind of thing, and we need to get that frame out there.
His website would be ellison.house.gov, and I'm guessing that you can probably send an email to him from there. Most Democrats let anybody email them. Most Republicans force you to have an address or at least a zip code in their district.
Right.
But you could try that. He has told me that he wants to be on the program more frequently, so I'm guessing that he'll be coming back, and there'll be other opportunities for you to talk with him. But those are crucial books. And David
really
Corten
crucial.
Is a friend and a
you
genius.
Know, Tom, you can invite David Corten and George Lakoff on too. I mean, we need to hear from them.
Yeah. Well, they've both been guests on the program before, Deborah, and they are excellent books. I absolutely agree with you. Deborah, thank you for the call. Good talking with you. Kip in Simi Valley, California. Hey, Kip, thanks for listening to AM 880. What's up?
I was watching C-SPAN a little while ago, and there was a Republican, Steve Russell, and he was going on against the House Bill H.R. 2997, where they're trying to force through the privatization of the FAA.
Right.
And he was going on about, you know, which I don't think a lot of people understand, is security.
Yep.
You know, the military uses the FAA.
Heavily.
You know, they're talking about, like, to be FAA, you have to be a citizen, you have to take an oath, and now we're going to turn it over to a private company.
Right. Do you really want a guy whose last job was delivering your pizza, you know, running your airplane as it's flying through the sky, you know, telling your airplane where to go?
Well, it's so much more than that. I don't think people really understand the depth of the FAA. It's like his example was during 9/11, they got 4,000 planes immediately down.
Right.
Where's a private company going to do this?
Yeah. No, I think if anything, you know, what we have learned from privatization, and we're seeing it with our military. In fact, Trump is trying to increase the level of privatization of our military. He's got a proposal, or the Trump administration has a proposal, to basically replace all of our soldiers in Iraq with mercenaries, with you know, so-called contractors. So that there will no longer be American troops coming home, because when contractors die, you never hear about it. They've got these non-disclosure clauses in their contracts. They're not even allowed, their families aren't even allowed to go to the news about it and say, you know, our husband just died in Iraq or Afghanistan. And, you know, privatization is not a good thing. Privatization typically costs 60 to 70% more than providing functions through government. It's in most cases. I'm with you, Kip. I'm totally with you. Privatizing the FAA is insane. Thanks for the call, and thanks for pointing it out. Charles in Atlanta. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Hey, thanks for the time. Really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk this afternoon. Enjoy your show.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, Tom, to SiriusXM.
Yeah, and, you know, I just an observation, Tom, in the conversation, Keith Ellison, you know, it was great having him on the show today, but, you know, I tell you, I'll be honest with you, and I have to be honest with you. The guy came on and ran right off. And I think that there's a perception now, at least after this 30% is controlling the political spectrum today with Trump. Though he locked those 30% of people in because they had the feeling that people were listening to them. That they heard that Trump was listening to them. And I have the feel. I'm just hearing and listening to your show. I'm hearing people say, "Boy, you know, I held for 2 hours to talk to Keith Ellison," or "Boy, I'm sorry, Keith Ellison couldn't make it." But the guy just ran on. He ran a couple of questions, but you ran like a myriad of questions by him. He just spouts off, "Hey, listen, this is what I."
Charles, you know, in defense of Congressman Ellison, he told us he had just come from the House of Representatives, where he had led a thing to defeat a god-awful piece of legislation that a Republican was proposing. If that causes him to be 20 minutes late for my show, I'm happy with that. And he has come on and taken calls from people for a half hour at a time before, and he's done very well with it. Let's cut the guy some slack, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
I got it. Well, that's just how I felt at the moment when I heard that.
Yeah.
And I felt like thank you for giving
me. Well, and I'm sorry if I characterized him, if my apology to my listeners for my having teased him came across as my being critical of him or caused people to think poorly of him, because he did everything right. I mean, with any guest, you know, who's coming on the program, you just never know. And a member of Congress, when Congress is in session, it's really difficult to nail down that specific amount of time. And, you know, I'm just, you know, he's a very, very good man, and he deserves our support. And he's, you know, he's the guy who is working the hardest to bring progressive values back to the Democratic Party, to bring the values of FDR and Lyndon Johnson's Great Society back to the Democratic Party. I think we need to honor that. Charles, thanks, though. I think that, you know, the conversation that you and I just had was a real important one in the event that anybody else was feeling the way that you were talking about. Charles, thank you so much for the call. Thanks for listening to SiriusXM. Chris in Capitola, California. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I wanted to point out something about the opioid epidemic and what he's talking about. It seems to me they say it's going to kill 28,000 people a year, about the same amount as the them losing all the benefits, all the medical benefits.
Right.
And two, I wanted to point out, I'm on opioids. I have a bad back. They want to operate on my back. And they say that, you know, I'll need two or three, possibly four operations. And I say, I don't want to go that route. So instead, just give me a little bit of pain pills so I can function, pull weeds, go for walks with my girlfriend, stuff like that. Man, I'm hitting a brick wall, and I'm probably not the only American in the world feeling like this. I feel like I'm the neglected. Hey, did everybody forget about us? I'm 62 years old. I'm in pain.
Yeah.
I don't want to get addicted to this stuff, but I don't want the crappy operation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one, Chris. And you know, I think that we went too liberal is the wrong word, but, you know, I mean, the drug companies were pushing opiates. And now it's getting freaky. I mean, you know, I had back surgery a few months ago, and you know, fortunately, the surgeon could prescribe narcotics for me, which I needed for a few days. Actually, I needed for about a week. And but prior to that, when I was in a lot of pain, I was walking around with a blown disc that it was slamming into the nerve on the right side, and so my whole right leg felt like somebody was beating it with a tire iron whenever I walked. And my regular doctor was like, you know, I can only give you a little tiny prescription, and it's got to have a lot of Tylenol in it, so that if you take, you know, more than you should, it'll destroy your liver and kill you. And, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's like, and she was just scared to write the prescription. You know, she's like, we're getting audited like every month by these people. So it's, you know, I agree, Chris, we've gone crazy. In two directions now, and we're being whipsawed by a pharmaceutical industry that doesn't have our interests in mind. It has Wall Street's interests in mind, and it's not a good thing. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, some people have been pointing out the Rat Park study. There are other studies that suggest it's not the cure-all. I still like it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The reason I still like it is because I have seen it in human beings. I have seen people, you know, slide into addiction out of despair and come back out of hope. Welcome back. John watching Free Speech TV on a Roku box in Everett, Washington. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
Listen, I got two quick things. First, I just wanted to second the fellow that was on earlier, an hour earlier, and he talked about communication with the Democratic Party.
Yeah,
I think that's really important, and I think they need to do more of it, because the news media just doesn't cover the Democrats very well.
Yeah, agreed.
And mainly, I like my representative, Susan Del Benny, sends me a newsletter via email like every 2 weeks as to what's going on, you know, and
yeah,
sooner if there's something big, you know, coming through.
Yeah, I get them anyway. from Jeff Merkley, for example. I'm not sure. I think I'm sure I've donated to his campaign in the past, and so I'm on his email list. But,
yeah,
but you know, you just need to go to their websites and sign up.
Yeah, that's what I'll have to do, because some of my senators just send me, Trump's terrible, Trump is bad, donate money kind of things without really any information. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, anyway, the main reason I called was had to do with Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
I miss your show on occasion, and I don't get to hear all the points you bring up, so I don't want to repeat myself here, but I'm curious, and on occasion, I think a while back, I heard you say Medicare Advantage, you weren't very positive about it.
No, I'm
Medicare
not.
Advantage plans.
I'm not.
And I'm curious, I'm in the situation where I have to make a decision now which way to go, and is there either your website or another website you could maybe recommend, or maybe give me a brief difference between what's available, you know, what the drawback on a Medicare.
I can give you a quick summary, but the Social Security Works is probably a great place to start. SocialSecurityWorks.org, I'm pretty sure, is their website. But you can DuckDuckGo the name Social Security Works. It's Alex Lawson's group organization, who fills in for me as a guest host from time to time. But basically what happened was, you know, Medicare was rolled out in the 60s, and the health insurance companies were like, thank God we don't have to insure older people over 65 anymore. It was losing us money. We can be much more profitable. And then they started noticing that billions of federal dollars were going into Medicare. And so they were like, well, how can we get some of this? And so, and I'm sorry, I don't know the date that the legislation, the Medicare Advantage legislation was passed, but it was the one of the very first attempts to drill major holes in Medicare. And what it is when you sign up for Medicare, I believe it used to cover 100% of things. Now it covers 80% of things. And so you can also get what's called Medigap insurance. And by the way, this is what I've done, and I really researched this carefully. Get Medigap insurance from a medical care, you know, from an insurance company, and that fills in that 20%. The alternative is you drop Medicare altogether. You're not on the Medicare list. You're not getting federal benefits at all, and you sign up for Medicare Advantage. The Medicare Advantage is provided to you by a for-profit health insurance company. United Healthcare is the largest in the country. They will play games with you as they can. And they are reimbursed not just by you, but by the federal government. So this is in my opinion, it's a scam. It's not a disaster for anybody who signs up for it, but I think it's a disaster for our country because now you've got these for-profit health insurance companies making billions, skimming money off the top on the Medicare Advantage programs. Plus, you're entirely being insured not by the federal government, but by whatever insurance company you buy. Now, you can drop it in any given year, but you have to wait for the eligibility period, which I think is around November or December, in order to drop it and pick up regular Medicare. So what I did, and I'm not recommending this to anybody, but I'll tell you what I did was take federal Medicare and take a supplemental plan. And there's a bunch of them out there. John, thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Loving What You Do, Ellen Ratner's new book. And on the line with us, Patrick Gavin with Talk Media News. Hey, Patrick, what's happening in the world today?
Well, obviously, everyone here in D.C. is just focused on healthcare for now. Mitch McConnell, it seems, is one vote away from having this thing slip through his hands. He can only afford to lose two senators, and he already has those in the form of, we assume, Rand Paul and also Susan Collins, with Mike Pence casting that decisive vote, we assume. Right now, a lot of folks are trying to wonder if Dean Heller from Nevada is going to be either the one to
right.
go.
Or Portman.
Or Portman as well, right. And I think that you know, what's interesting about this is obviously if, you know, on the one hand, we assume no senator probably wants to be the one to at least be blamed for having sunk the repeal and replacing of Obamacare. But, you know, if one goes, you know, more than likely you're probably going to get about 10 to go as well. I mean, this thing will probably never even necessarily make it to the floor in that case. But, you know, there are a number of senators who I think if things aren't looking good, we'll all of a sudden come out of the woodwork. So this could be one of these things that ends up being quite embarrassing for Mitch McConnell. Sort of interesting, we're hearing in the latest, out of the latest proposal coming out of the Senate, what folks are kind of calling the polar payoff, which is that some of the changes in this new Republican legislation would actually send hundreds of million dollars in extra federal dollars to Alaska, where that's obviously where Senator Lisa Murkowski is from and has also been is a key and necessary and needed vote to this bill. I mean, you recall the quote-unquote Cornhusker kickback from, 2009, I believe. You know, one of the interesting things from the CBO score that was largely bad for this bill was that it did give them some deficit savings and, you know, which allows Mitch McConnell to kind of play with some federal dollars while simultaneously keeping it budget neutral under these budget rules. And so we are now exactly seeing that happen, which is, you know, sadly how the sausage gets made a little bit. Yeah. You know, I think that the one other interesting thing that we're kind of seeing is, I mean, I believe Trump tweeted out the past 24 hours, you know, I'm sitting around at my desk, pen in hand, waiting for the Senate to kind of get their act together on this. I mean, he's been noticeably absent from really this entire process, at least certainly once it got its way into the Senate. Mitch McConnell made it really clear from the beginning that he wanted to do his own bill, and I don't know if Trump's reflecting that or if Trump just, you know, doesn't really find the policy making that interesting. But, you know, with a signature Republican proposal, the single biggest thing that they've done all year or that they're trying to do, to see the President of the United States, you know, noticeably absent in doing any behind-the-scenes wrangling, any public maneuvering, is quite interesting. I think speaks to not only, I think, the dissent within the Republican Party on this particular issue, but I think also Trump's general disinterest and the real nuts and bolts of how lawmaking gets done.
You know, what I find baffling, Patrick Gavin, is that Donald Trump campaigned on, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm guessing my words are actually probably pretty precise. He campaigned on, I'm not going to take away your Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. Every other Republican on this stage will. I won't, number one. And number two, he said, when we replace Obamacare, we're going to make sure that everybody in the country is covered and that you have better coverage under you than you have under Obamacare and that it costs our nation less money. Now, the only way to do that is with single-payer health care that I know of. That is also true of the Republicans. In fact, more than one has come out and said, you know, this looks like it's going to come down to either taking away people's health care or going with single payer. And they're choosing to take it away. But what I don't get is that he tweeted this morning from France and he's been calling Republican senators saying, go for this legislation, when it's the exact opposite of what he got elected on. How does that work?
No, it's a good point. And, you know, sadly, this is an isolated incident. I mean, I do think Trump is obviously more concerned about politics than policy. I mean, even on this particular issue.
I think he just wants a win.
Exactly. And you'll recall, when the House passed their version of repeal and replace, not only did he claim it to be a massive victory, he held a Rose Garden ceremony, which is totally bizarre, of course. And then, once the politics of the House bill got bad, thanks to the CBO score and also the fact that the Senate wanted to start totally over, then Trump actually said that the House version was mean, even though he literally held a celebration ceremony for that very bill. And it's just because, you know, for him at least, the politics had changed, and he thought that'd be more advantageous to take a different position. So I think, to your point, you know, it's unfortunate that he operates that way, but I think also totally not surprising in the sense that this guy's not consistent, you know, occasionally, you know, sometimes inconsistency in politics can be great, but in this case, it just seems, you know, he just wants to get a W on the board and doesn't really care how or why.
Yeah, which is sad. I mean, this is not how politics should be done in the United States, particularly with a piece of legislation that has 12% approval.
So. Yeah, I mean, and this is why, you know, I always go back and forth, and I don't know what you think, but I always am so reluctant to think that Mitch McConnell is not going to get his way just because he typically does. And
yeah.
It's hard to imagine a scenario in which he's spent so much time and, you know, pushed through July 4th recess and pushed.
Well, he's got tens of billions of dollars now to bribe senators with. I think, you know, most of that money for opiates is going to go to West Virginia to get Shelley Morcapito's vote.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Yeah, and maybe to Ohio for Rob Portman. We'll see. Anyhow, Patrick Gavin with Talk Media News. Thank you, Patrick.
Take care.
Great talking with you. And thank you all for being with us today and this week. Today is Friday, right? Last week I screwed it up. This week I won't. Thanks so much for being with us this week. Have a great weekend. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. See you tomorrow. Oh, we'll see you Monday. Excuse me.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.